Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since curtains, and you're listening to Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I talked to Sasha Ortiz, who has spoken at TEDx and is International Miss Texas. We'll be discussing about all things mental well-being, as well as what she's getting up to these days. Sasha, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, Gavin. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good. Pleasure. Thank you for taking the time, because I know you're, you know, busy doing loads. You have stuff going on. By the way, everyone, we're talking to Sasha. She is in Texas, and I'm recording this at 5:30, and there it's 11:30. So I'm glad it's 5:30. I'll be honest with you. It's been a long working day. But if it was the weekend, that'd be different. How's your week been so far, Sasha?
Busy but productive. Can't complain. I'm glad it's not 5:30 though.
Now, just for our listeners, Sasha was on the show with us a few weeks ago with Cindy Booth, some of the staff from there, the director and producer, and we were talking about short films, and one of them was Strange Fruit. And Sasha's come on the show again. We're going to talk about mental well-being, as I mentioned, and we'll find out a bit more about what Sasha's been up to. Sasha, look, start with us from the beginning. Tell us a bit about yourself and your background and how you got to where you are now.
Sure. So I'm a native of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. I'm from Dallas, Texas. I am currently completing my PhD in clinical psych. So aside from that, I'm also reigning International Miss Texas, which is a pageant title that I'm very proud to hold. If you are from the States, you know that Texans are very proud of being from Texas. So anything to represent my state, I'm always happy to do. And in the process of doing that, you know, I've just kind of over the years had a strong passion for all things related to mental health, obviously, as a clinical psychologist. So throughout my time in grad school, I've had various projects and things I had a chance to get involved with. And so in the midst of my research for my TED talk, actually, which was about my experience with intimate partner violence, I came up on some information about a short film called Strange Fruit. And I just kind of was fascinated with the whole process and all of it and felt compelled to reach out. And it's kind of taken off from there. So that combined with several other projects, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm truly living my dreams. I'm really blessed and really fortunate to be able to just think, you know, think about the things I want to do in my life and pursue them and have amazing support people around me who, it doesn't matter how crazy of an idea I come up with, they're like, yeah, do it. And then when I turn around and do it, they're like, you actually did that. So, yeah.
I think it's brilliant. And it takes a lot of guts to come forward and talk about yourself and your experiences. And obviously with your clinical psychology background as well, you know, it's brilliant. You bring that all together in one. And your Miss International Texas. Talk to us about that. How did that come about? When did you go for it? And that would be brilliant to hear.
Wow. Talk about a synchronicity. So today would have been my wedding anniversary. I got divorced once upon a time. And around the time I got divorced, like all people who were going through a loss, I became really down and out, you know, and I kind of, at the end of my marriage, I really didn't feel proud of myself anymore and didn't really feel like I really had much left to do. Not, you know, thinking I was going to hurt myself, but more so just, you know, what else is there in life? You know, you don't plan on being single again randomly, especially not at a young age. So I was kind of in that process of, oh, I'm done. I'm going to be single forever. And my friends were like, you know what?
Oh, dear.
I had decided I was going to be single forever. So my friends said, well, even if you stay single, what you don't ever do is give up on yourself. So why don't you do this pageant? And I'm like, what does pageantry have to do with being divorced? And they were like, everything. And so my sorority sister challenged me to go out for it. And I won a local title, which kind of bumped me. It's just kind of levels. You just keep going. And before I knew it, I was International Miss Texas. And then that was the COVID year. So all of us kind of got a free do-over. So I got to get a second chance at the title this year because of COVID, since we're kind of back in person in Texas now. And so International Miss Texas has just been, my platform was economic empowerment through entrepreneurship. So working to empower women around the DFW metro, or internationally empowering women to take care of their mental health, but also to pursue financial freedom. Because like I talked about in my talk, you know, financial burden is one of the main reasons people stay in bad situations, especially women. So my goal is to empower women to find their skill set and to leverage it to, you know, live the lives they've dreamed.
I think it's fantastic. Did it give you more self-confidence in going and winning the pageants and the Miss International Texas? Because you mentioned earlier that you kind of felt like, oh, I'm not going to get married again, or I'm not going to find someone. And that's fair enough. You know, if you go for a breakup, I think everyone goes for a bit of time where they don't feel that confident and they feel like, oh, I'm not going to be able to, you know, find someone and all the rest of it. But after doing all of that, did you feel more self-confident afterwards?
For sure. You know, and a strange thing happened when I did that pageant. Not only did I get my confidence back, but what I really saw was I had a different type of confidence. You know, I'm 6 feet tall. No one knows that, but I'm very tall.
Gosh, you're tall.
So, you know, confidence and height, you know, sometimes goes synonymously, but for me, I may be 6 feet tall, but after I got divorced, I probably felt like I had lost a several inches. So I think that it gave me a new type of confidence to understand that who I am and what I represent is inside of me, not necessarily the outside. So pageantry, yes, is about being a beauty queen and all that good stuff. But what it really did was help me to leverage other parts of myself and other skills that I had. Like, it helped me to really challenge myself to get into public speaking and to motivating and empowering other women in a very tangible way. And then I'd say it really helped me to really hone in on my mental health, because it's kind of funny, like when you do something all day, sometimes you can lose sight of yourself doing it. So I began to walk my talk in a whole new way with being aware of my health, my physical and my mental health, because prepping for a pageant is not easy. You're getting judged against women from all over the world. It's an international pageant, and women, I have a belief that every woman on the planet is beautiful in her own way. So being in the room full of some of the most talented, accomplished, beautiful women in the world, you know, you prepare for that a little bit differently. So, you know, prepping for the pageant really put me back in touch with my mind, body, spirit health.
You know, the main thing I picked up from that is you're 6 foot. Right. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm 5'8". So if you were standing next to me, I'd look like a little dwarf. Well done. I think it's fantastic what you've been through, honestly. I mean, and it must be difficult, isn't it? The competition and being judged, because we don't really like to be judged, but obviously you understand the point of, if you're going for a competition, you're going to be judged. So did that take a certain mindset to be able to think, right, I've got to be able to take on, you know, critique, and whether it's negative or positive, doesn't matter, but I need to be able to accept what people are going to say. Did that take some extra level of thinking for you, or was you okay? And I'm guessing obviously everybody had to go through that. So how'd you deal with that?
Great question. You know, I would say that short answer is yes. Being judged is never easy, especially when you choose it. You do mentally prepare yourself in a way. And frankly, I started mentally preparing myself for that. I started running during the pandemic. I knew I encouraged all my clients to take care of their mental health because we were all indoors all the time. And my mental health, my personal therapy became getting out and running in nature. I live next to a nature reserve, so I'm really fortunate like that. I run through the woods every day. I started running one day and I never stopped. And so I started noticing that my thought processes changed and my idea of competition changed. So my new competition was no longer, you know, based on if I get this, if I get that, that's my worth. It was, yesterday I could run, I ran half a mile and it took me 8 minutes. Today I'm going to run that half a mile in 5 minutes. And then it began, I can run a mile in 5 minutes or 2 miles. And now I do three a day and it's nothing. So my confidence and my ability to judge myself changed. And it began to literally be, I'm trying to outdo my last best effort. Today, I'm going to outdo what I did yesterday. Some days it was, I'm coasting. Some days I was just walking through the woods. And that was all okay, because my thing was, I promised myself I would show up for me every day. So judgment became about, did I do right by myself today? Because if I did right by myself, I can guarantee I'll do right by every person that I meet along the way.
Absolutely. It makes a lot of sense. Do you do a lot of self-analysis? It sounds like you do a lot of reflection, self-analysis to better yourself. And you're doing brilliantly, but it sounds like you kind of, you're every day you're trying to build on yourself and your confidence and your achievements. Is that right?
Yes, thank you. I do. I'm a writer. I'm a journaler. I've been keeping a diary since I was 5. I won't say how old I am, but I'm over 21. And so that's a long time to chronicle your own life. And I'm a huge fan of Benjamin Franklin, the United States president, one of the founding fathers of the United States. And he had what's called his 16 virtues, if you read any of his literature. And so I practice Ben Franklin's 16 virtues. in that I believe in keeping an assessment of my own progress as a human being. Like I said, mind, body, spirit, health, and how I'm being with other people. I have a 3-year-old son. So one of these days, he's going to be cognizant enough to like judge me, you know, and look at me and say, because children don't do what we say, they do what we do. So I want to teach my son, you know, I want to teach him to walk his talk. And so I've got to walk mine. And, you know, as a mental health professional, same thing with my clients. I try to empower them with tools, and I don't ever recommend anything that I haven't tried and successfully accomplished myself. So it's, for me, it's really big to self-assess from now until, you know, you take your last breath, if you can.
And so you practice what you preach, basically.
I try.
I suppose, yeah, we all try, I suppose. And it's brilliant because it sounds like you want to be a real role model to your son as well. It really sounds like, I can really hear that. And what a role model. He's got a lot to live up to.
You know. He's an amazing kid. He actually challenges me to be better every day. Like, he is
good.
I call him my little supervisor. He is on it. Like, he's the smartest human being I know, truly.
He's going to be your best mate, I think, as he gets older. He's probably your best mate now, but as he gets older, I can imagine. That's brilliant, Sasha. So basically, projects that you're working on, because you're working on quite a few internationally, domestically. What are you working on? Talk to us.
Everything.
Yeah, I know. Do you know what, Sasha, I'll be honest with you, I don't know where to start.
Right.
There's so much, you're like a bundle of energy. You know, you're like so much, like an explosion of energy. So from the point you get up in the morning, it sounds like you've got a million things that you want to achieve, and you're very busy, obviously, and you've got some business ventures I know you're working on. Yes. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But start with your projects at the moment in terms of internationally, domestically, and that kind of thing.
Sure. And I can tell you how that happened. Short answer, when I had COVID and I caught it early.
Oh, did you get it? What, you got? Oh, right.
Way back in December of 2020, right? Oh. Right before it came out that it was a thing. Because I had antibodies early on. But anyway, having COVID forced me in a good way to reflect, because you spend 14 days quarantined. You don't know what's going to happen. That was back when we didn't know anything. I actually lost a relative, a loved one died of COVID right before I caught it. So I was terrified. I have a son, you know? And so I said the prayer that everybody says when they're facing their mortality. I said, you know, hey, whoever's out there listening, if you hear me, if and when I get through this, I promise you, I'm going to be a lot more intentional with my time. So what I did when I was made a full recovery, I ended up just really having a 4-day headache and being in my room a lot. I made a lot of plans. I look back on what have I been doing? You know, as a doctoral student, we have this really unfortunate belief of when I graduate, I'll. And for me, I began to understand all I have is now. You know, all any of us really has is right now. And so I got busy. So I got busy doing, I started my makeup line. That was part of my entrepreneurship project that I was working on with my pageant platform. I got busy doing the thing with Strange Fruit. And I've always had a passion for skincare and beauty. In my past life, I worked for Chanel Beauty as a makeup and skincare specialist. And all the jobs I ever had in high school were pretty much related to skincare, beauty, things like that, or the fashion industry. So I had always had a passion and desire to pursue something with that. And so, you know, I had been working with a good friend of mine on the East Coast for about a decade. We've been talking about some of this stuff. We're old friends from high school. And it was like, hey, let's do this. And she's just like, yeah, you know, let's do it. And so it kind of just went from there.
That's brilliant. We're just going to go to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So you've mentioned to us that you've worked on a few things, and we'll go more into detail about the business side of things a bit later. Yeah. In terms of clinical psychology, so, I mean, I'm assuming because it sounds complex, I'll be honest with you. And tell us how that informs your definition of health and how you're using that. And because you've got clients as well you work with, is that right?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Clients basically, you with the clinical psychology, you have clients that you work with at the moment. Is that right?
I did. I'm at the phase of my academic, that I'm in a break mode, but come August, I'll be seeing patients again. Yes.
Ah, brilliant. Okay. And, was you seeing patients last year, for example, or?
Yes. I saw patients all throughout COVID. Yes. We were just meeting virtually like this, but yeah, which was actually way harder to do than in person.
Of course. What's the difference between person and doing it over Zoom, Teams or Zoom? What are the challenges and that kind of thing?
Great question. So as psychologists, believe it or not, we're considered behavioral scientists. So we observe body language. So if I'm sitting in the room with you, I can see you from head to toe, right? I can see if you're crossing your arms or folding your legs or turning away or fidgeting or looking at the clock, versus if you're on Zoom, it's literally just this right here. Number one. Number two, when a client who's used to coming to your office, there's a certain ritualisticness to that, that when a person comes into your office, they're in a certain mindset that I'm here to do business. I'm here to talk to a doctor about an issue. Like if you go to your doctor for anything, right? Versus if your doctor's meeting you in your living room, you might be in your pajamas. You might be drinking coffee. Your dog may be in the corner fighting with your cat. Your cat may be sitting on your head. Your children may be coming and waving at me in the background. There's a million distractions, not to mention I'm the doctor kind of meeting you in your space. I mean, I'm in my own space, right? So there's a level of personal or impersonal element that comes into the therapy session that never happened before. And so you have to establish rapport or connect with the client much differently and much more quickly than with someone who you've met in person, versus I spent 18 months talking to people who to this day I've never met in real time and probably never will again. So that was very unique because it really forces the person, the doctor, to you better have a good personality and you better be good at getting people to feel comfortable with you, because otherwise it's going to be real awkward.
Yeah, no, it sounds absolutely. What were some of the subjects for discussion during your sessions with your clients?
Sure. The number one was depression. A lot of people were really struggling with the loneliness and the isolation. You know, people didn't understand, I don't think, how much they missed in person. Even people who used to be kind of standoffish, I think, became aware of that, like, desire and that need to connect, because humans are social animals, right? And then the second most common was, unfortunately, domestic violence. A lot of patients were sheltered in place and in situations that were already bad, but I think they became untenable when they were sheltered in place. And I think the tempers were rising, and being stuck together like that in homes and close quarters, a lot of people kind of realized, like, this isn't working at all and I need out of here. And so, you know, being stuck together despite that, and then some people losing their jobs, a lot of people finances shifted so they weren't able to leave. So I think we saw domestic violence rates skyrocket.
Of course. I remember doing a show around the 2020 when we discussed a few things, and domestic violence, mental health was a massive thing, obviously, at the time, because being isolated can cause both those issues. If you're isolated with the alleged perpetrator, that's one thing. But if you're always at home and possibly your work's at, under pressure or at risk of, you know, redundancy, etc., it's a lot to take on. So it must have been a lot to emotionally manage, because you must have had a lot of people breaking down to you about what's going on. And so you really heard the effects on society, basically, from people and of all backgrounds, really, isn't it?
Oh, for sure, Gavin. You know, that's how I started running, actually. It got to the point that, I mean, because I was in my living room or my private office in my home listening to people, and I would get off the computer and go, you know, cook dinner for my son or bathe him or put him to bed, and he'd be gone to sleep, but I'd be up all night kind of with these things that normally, again, when we're in an office, I can leave that at the office and there's like a ritual. I close my computer, I can do my notes, shut my door and lock it, and I go home and then I walk to my car and I'm like, oh, and I drive home and I forget about it all. Versus I'm in the office all day, every day. Like I was sitting right over there when someone told me this horror story. And so I learned quickly that I have to do something with that energy, because energy is not created or destroyed. It's transformed or transferred. So I had to transform that anxiety, that depression that people left with me, because that's what people go to therapy to do, to unpack emotional baggage and leave it there. I call myself an emotional baggage claim specialist. That's my real job title. So I did. I started running and I would go out in the woods and I would leave that out there. I would go out there and I would, sometimes I would cry. Sometimes I would yell. Sometimes I would talk to animals that I saw. I know it sounds kind of woo-woo or weird, but it was my way of really releasing it, because a lot of therapists have their own therapy that they go to process what we call vicarious trauma, right? Which is the stuff you listen to all day does impact you professionally and emotionally yourself. And if you haven't done your own work, you're in trouble. So for me, a physical exercise practice was my remedy on top of receiving my own professional counseling from mentors and people who we process professional-based issues that clients are bringing up.
No, totally. You know, I've spoken to quite a few people, even during interviews and privately in my own life, and working from home has its pros, but it has its cons, because you don't really feel like you've left the office, if that makes sense, you know. I've spoken to some people where they're like, they've got a specific room in the house or wherever it is set up, so it's an office. When they leave that office, they close the door and that's it, basically. They don't go back into there until it's work time again or anything like that. Also, the other thing is some people work later or earlier because they can work from home and they find themselves doing more. And it's like, gosh, where do you put the brakes on, you know?
Yes, balance became key during the pandemic. For me, I was always very schedule oriented, but I became more so. And I found that really putting good boundaries around my time was saving. Actually, like you said, I got really busy during the pandemic and never stopped being busy. But it actually allowed me to do more, like being able to say, I will not do anything related to patient care after, you know, 2 p.m. I'm done for the day. Normally, and that's the other thing, we weren't able to see as many patients online. I know that's an oxymoron because of the weight of talking to someone, people for 6 hours straight. In your own home.
You've got 6 hours.
Oh yeah. I was seeing about six people a day. So 6 hours a day, I'm talking to people about these heavy, heavy topics. And so for me, I had a hard stop. That was a couple of hours before my son would come home from his daycare that he would go to. And so I would, like I said, get out there and run, do errands, do other work. And I would always make sure that I did something fun that was like pointless, that had nothing to do with achievement.
Total distraction.
Send the YouTube videos, dancing around, being silly, call my best friend and say, hey, what's the funniest thing that happened to you today? You know, just little things like that to distract away from, like you said, the constant being on at work.
Absolutely. Let's talk about TEDx talks. How did you get on that? I mean, it's such a popular kind of show. Like, how did that come about?
I really don't know. I'm not kidding. There's moments that I'm so like, how did I don't even know.
Because it's really popular, isn't it? It's so popular.
I will say I'm the luckiest woman in the world. I'm always in the right place at the right time. That's truly a coincidence. What happened was, there was a call for, there was like TEDx basically hosts, auditions, like any other show. So it's like you versus a million people and you're like, I'm not going to get this, but it's worth shooting my shot. Right. And so what happened was a funny thing. I met with this friend of mine who had given a TED talk and I was like, how did you get it? And she said, TED thing is about an innovative idea worth sharing. Surely you've had something unique happen to you. And I'm like, no, I can't think of anything. And then she's like, are you serious? And so she's like, you maybe want to tell them about the time that you died. And I was like, oh yeah, that. Okay.
Okay. I want to know about this as well.
Well, in a nutshell, I won't spoil my own show. Go watch my TED talk if you haven't yet. But basically I was assaulted once upon a time, and the person, as a result of the assault, I flatlined and I was taken to the hospital and pronounced clinically dead for a few minutes and had to be revived. And when I was revived, I always say that was when my second life began, which is the one I'm on now. And so I pretty much, my friend literally talked me into sharing that narrative, because I had once told her that if I ever get a chance, if this story would save even one life, that I'd tell it. And so, you know, it was something I had never shared publicly. So it was a huge emotional risk. But I told that story to during the audition, and like everyone there cried. They're just like, what? And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's my story. And so they were like, you know, we'll call you. And then COVID happened, because the audition was right before COVID. So a year went by. They weren't even sure they were going to host the event. And then in that year, I actually worked with a coach. I was fortunate to be able to hire a coach who pretty much taught me public speaking, the ins and outs of it, because public speaking isn't just picking up a mic and saying what you think. There's an art to it. And TED is a specific style of public speaking. And so anyway, I spent the year polishing myself and hoping. And then one day I got a phone call, and they're like, congratulations, you've been selected. And I was like, oh my God, I have to say this in person. I have to tell the world this story. And so the day of the event, I literally didn't talk to anyone on the phone. Well, that's not true. I think my boyfriend may have called me, and I was just like, babe, I don't want to talk. I'm so scared. I'm nervous. And he's like, you're going to do fine. And even he didn't know what my topic was. I wasn't telling anyone but my coach. That was the only person I talked to. And so the day of the event, I got up and I gave my talk, and I literally walked right off the stage. And I'm so glad it's pitch black in that room. Like, it's like a spotlight on the stage. Because I literally, as soon as I got off stage, I just broke down and cried. I bawled my eyes out. There was actually a broom closet right there. I stepped into a closet and cried. And the lady's like, oh, that's a closet. I was like, yes, I know. And then I just went in there and broke down, because I couldn't believe I had said it. I freed myself. And I always said that, you know, that woman that happened to, I promised her back in 2008, that I would do justice for her, that her life would matter. So that was what my TED talk was about, and about a theory that I've, you know, come to know as my truth, which is called my STEM theory of support, time, energy, and money being the biggest ways we transact in this world, support being most important, that if you have support, you know, you can really achieve anything in your life. So that was what my TED talk was about. So go watch it if you can.
I will do. You know, I'm hoping to get some real spoilers right now on this. Basically, it's amazing. I think, like, you know, you survived that, and then you went on TEDx and you spoke about it. I think that's brilliant. And it takes a lot of courage, doesn't it, to get on, you know, the world stage and disclose this information about you that's been hanging. It sounds like it was kind of hanging over you and pulling you back a bit at some point. Would that be right?
No, the only reason I was able to talk about it was because I had moved past that. But I did intensive healing work on myself for a very long time. I was very, again, fortunate and very blessed, when that happened, to be connected with a community, a DV survivor community. I won't say their name, 'cause I don't know. I would not want to spotlight anyone else who have been with that community, The goal is hopefully to connect them with Strange Fruit. Hopefully, fingers crossed, I'm working on that behind the scenes. But the goal was to heal myself. And so I got an opportunity to go on some amazing retreats, some amazing, receive intensive therapy for counseling, for, you know, just self-rejuvenation. And I pursued it with all my heart. I'm living proof, literally, that it doesn't matter what's happened to you. But if you are determined to heal and to grow and to thrive through whatever, you can. It's a choice. And so I chose personally to de-identify with being a survivor. And I call myself a thriver, because survival is living day to day, hoping to live for tomorrow. Thriving is living for today, being in the moment and enjoying it. And
so absolutely.
I think totally. I got past it. That's the only reason I was able to talk about that.
Right, right. We're just going to a quick ad break, and we'll be right back.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer. part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Sasha, talk to us. Tell us about your three biggest passions in life.
Oh, man, my three biggest passions. That's hard to narrow them down. Passions. One's a concept, and I kind of spoke on it a minute ago, support. So that's the people, places, things, and ideas that sustain you. You can create it for yourself or you can get out and find it. Sometimes you have to be it for yourself or to other people. So I'm passionate about providing support to other people. That's kind of what I do for a living as a clinician. And I'm very committed to always making sure that I'm maintaining that because it saved my life once. Two, I would say I'm super passionate about beauty. I know that for some people that may sound shallow, and I don't mean the aspect of something being attractive. I mean the idea. My business motto is beauty is in the eye of the beholder and the hands of the determined. So if you are determined to beautify something, your home, your life, your career, your mindset, you know, your health, whatever it is, it's in your hands to do if you're determined. So I'm passionate about helping redefine beauty internationally and what it means to be as a woman, because that's all I am right now as a woman. So no offense to the guys. If you want to be beautiful too, be beautiful as well. But for women specifically, redefining beauty standards. When you're a 6 foot tall woman, sometimes you have to be, you're probably outside of a box. So I've learned over time that helping empower other women to appreciate themselves as they are and polish themselves how they want. And thirdly, I would say education. I am pursuing a PhD. I have read a lot of books, maybe too many books, but I love knowledge. I love information. Information is powerful, like knowing what's out there. Whoever invented the internet, if I ever get to shake their hand, like I just have a million questions for them. So I'm a lifelong learner, and I really believe that education is the second most important thing a person can give themselves. And it doesn't have to be formal. You know, you can, I always tell people, build your own degree, go to the public library, those still exist, and pick up some books and read them. What do you want to know? Educate yourself on it. So I have a love affair with knowledge because it won't ever end in heartbreak.
No, totally. I can hear that. I mean, you know, you sound like you enjoy reading, basically. And I wouldn't be surprised after you finish the clinical psychology, you might go on to do other things as well, other study other subjects. I don't know.
I will, for sure.
Oh, what is your favorite book? And let's go to some more details about you.
My favorite book.
It sounds like there might be loads. I might be getting myself in a bit of a problematic area.
I'm going to narrow it down. Probably Think and Grow Rich, because it's a book that, despite talking about financial success, it's really talking about the barriers that prevent you from being successful in anything, which the crux of the book is a slight spoiler, is your mindset. And the author really, he was before his time, Napoleon Hill, who the book's by. He talks a lot about if you find yourself stuck in your career, your love life, you know, financially having issues, you probably somewhere have a belief of unworthiness. And until you tap into what that's about and uproot that and replant new seeds, you might remain stuck. So the book's a really great blueprint for how to get out of your own way and how to identify positive things in your life that are indicators that, look, you are successful, you're headed in the right direction, and therefore you think rich and you will grow rich. And rich meaning blessed, successful, you know, whatever riches you wish to have, not just monetary.
Of course. And I totally agree with that because, you know, mindset is kind of everything. There's always a way of doing something, isn't it? There's always a strategy. But it's kind of pulling your mind to it because I think as humans, we're all kind of, everyone's to some degree feels intimidated by or fearful about making changes. And mindset is such a massive thing, especially nowadays. I think mindset is a massive, massive thing. You know, is there any, I mean, even as a clinical psychologist, in terms of mindset, is there anything that you could tell us that might be able to help us make changes? Well, I suppose the starting in steps, how would we try and make changes in our own life or adapt to change? Because that's the most difficult thing, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, yes. If someone learns how to take away the fear of change, they will be a trillionaire. Maybe that'll be my next goal. But I'd say the steps are self-awareness, taking a risk of applying that self-awareness, and then reflection, kind of like Ben Franklin's tenets. So journaling, easy peasy, get yourself a notebook. And I walk my talk, so here it is right here, a notebook.
I can see it just for the listeners. I can see it.
I have a pen. I don't know where it went. But sit down with yourself and write. When you feel stressed, when you notice yourself having stinking thinking, as I call it, and we all do. I do too. Some days I wake up and I'm like, what the heck am I doing with my life? And then I see him like, oh, that kid right there, that's the one thing I'm doing good. Because he's smiling and he's thriving and he's a good kid. So asking yourself the hard questions, what am I afraid of? What's the worst thing I think is going to happen? And really pouring those thoughts out of you on paper. Research literally shows that physically writing something down is creating a mind-body connection and an emotional release is actually occurring. So it's literally coming out of your hands into the paper, the emotion, the fear, the excitement, the anticipation of the change, you know? So when you can do that, you can go back and reflect. You can talk about, here's what I'm worried about happening. Here's what I think will happen. And then chart your progress. Start to notice how you feel after you do some journaling. And then two, when you're applying it. So if you notice, you know, I feel afraid because my parents always told me that I wasn't good enough. Or, you know, I have this negative self-talk. I get down on myself and compare myself to other people. So maybe my thing is, next time I'm comparing myself to someone, I'm going to catch myself doing it. And instead, I'm going to say, they're good at what they're good at, but I'm good at something too. What is that? I'm going to focus on that one thing. So for me, if I'm really great at motivating other people, all right, how can I motivate them and me? And then thirdly, I'm going to sit at the end of the day and reflect, how did I decide today to motivate myself and someone else? Like I said, when I was describing how I worked myself up to running 3 miles a day, I didn't do that my first day out. My first day I walked 3 miles, but I certainly didn't run them. It was because I kept at it just a little bit more every day. I said, okay, I'll run for 30 more seconds and 30 more seconds. And before I knew it, I was doing the whole thing. So life's a marathon, y'all. It's not a sprint. So if you're finding yourself wanting to change your thoughts and your fears into dreams and realities that are good, just start with small incremental changes and challenge yourself. And if you fall short of your goal, that's actually good. You know what your goal is for tomorrow. So tomorrow, lather, rinse, and repeat.
Well, thank you for that, Sasha. I think it's really helpful information. And obviously it's working for you, so obviously it works. Because you do so many different things.
It does work, you know? I promise. If it doesn't, call me and we'll figure out what it does.
And your favorite film?
Oh, that's an easy one. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. It's got Jim Carrey. It's got Kate Winslet, two phenomenal actors. Kate Winslet is one of my personal sheroes. She's a beauty maven herself for L'Oreal. But it's a really great movie about relationships and about breakups. And it really is honest to me as a clinical psychologist and sort of lab geek scientist type. It kind of shows you where science might take us one day. I kind of hope maybe. But it's really funny too, but it really shows how when two people keep being drawn to each other over and over again, and it makes you ask all these existential questions. But it's a cool movie because I think we've all been in that place where it's like, I love this person, but I'd like to forget you too. I want to forget about that bad time we had together and then remember all those good times. And it just reminds you like, oh, those good times and bad times are tightly interwoven. So I can't leave one without the other. And have had you. So as someone who's been divorced, I've watched that movie probably more than I should have, but it definitely got me through a few rainy days. So one of my faves.
Good, good, good. Tell us a bit more about your business, your beauty business, and what's going on with that, and where can people find products?
Oh, great question. Thank you. So my beauty brand is called Golden Goddess Beauty Co. or Corporation. We're not corporate yet. Hopefully we won't ever be, actually. We're going to stay mom and pop, or mom and sister. I don't know. But so Golden Goddess Beauty Corporation is mostly skincare based. We're actually still doing a lot of product development. We're doing some really cool launches in correlation with the film Strange Fruit, because we've got some cool surprises. I won't spoil them for the crew and the actresses in the film. We're working hard to try to get some deals struck with them. So we will be fully launching on our website. It is coming soon at the moment, but it's thegoldengoddess.com is the website. But for now, we're really just formulating, because my goal is to have products that are accessible to women. It is a luxury skincare brand. And by that, because, I mean, like I said, I work for Chanel Beauty, so while I will never be Chanel, I'm going to try. My goal is to really produce a really high quality chain of products that build upon themselves, and that women, men, cats, dogs, whoever likes to put stuff on their face can enjoy. And the, like I said, the crux of it really is to help women to address issues using very unique ingredients. I don't want to spoil the surprise, but I'll just say that building this brand has been a crowning moment for me.
Brilliant.
Here's a teaser for you.
Sounds exciting. Sounds exciting.
I'm very excited about it. It's been a labor of love. And then on the other side of it, we have the beauty aspect, which is makeup. We have, so far, last season, we came out with some lip glosses that were debuted during New York City Fashion Week. I had a really cool ad in Times Square. That was a really cool pinnacle moment to look up, and there was J-Lo at one point on my left, and there was Drake on my right, and I was in the middle, and I was like, oh my God.
That is cool. How cool is that?
J-Lo and Drake, when's that going to happen in real time? At the Polo store, my stuff was featured on the ads over by the Polo store. So this year we're going for New York Fashion Week again. There's talks of possibly doing Paris Fashion Week. We don't know yet. My business partner and I are super ambitious, so she's trying to push the envelope into some possibly fashion stuff. We'll see. I'm like, I'm a model. I don't know if I'm a designer. You're the designer. So we'll see. But our brand is just ever expanding. But the beauty aspect of it was to create colors that are appealing to women of all skin colors, from the, you know, ivory to the darkest of ebony. Is the goal is to create skincare. Me as a Afro-Latina woman, it's really important that representation, you know, representing women of all backgrounds from around the world. International beauty literally has everything in it. So that's my goal, is to create a line of products that women from no matter where in the world they are, that if they can access the product, that they can use it.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Fantastic. And well done on that. And good luck for that for the future. If you could have dinner with anyone in history, alive or has passed, who would it be?
Oh, that's a good question. I kind of gave the spoiler. Maybe I'm going to choose someone different.
Oh, you did mention someone early on. I do remember. But anyway,
I'm going to choose someone different, since I kept choosing them. These days, it would probably be... I probably would want to eat brunch with Queen Elizabeth, I think.
Gosh.
Yeah, the Queen Mother. You know why? Because I watched the show The Crown. That might sound cheesy. That's one of my favorite TV, series. But she's a formidable woman. She's been through some things. And I have one of my favorite pictures that I have that motivates me is a picture of her dressed to the nines, hat, gloves, pearls. And she's outside at a cannon, helping them brush up on sharpshooting, because I've heard she's a very good shot. I'm also a very good shot. And so I'm like, I'd like to go have brunch with her and go out shooting with the queen, and maybe ride some horses too, and just ask her whatever she's willing to tell me. Like, how do you do you? Like, what is that like? I would love to know, like, how are you the most powerful woman in the world? Like, what's what's the, your favorite part of your day, and how have you sustained yourself to such a beautiful, you know, age in life, and to just be wonderful and queenly? Like, can you give me some pointers? So I would love to talk to the true queen and ask her, like, all her wisdom, if whatever she's willing to share. I wish she'd write a book, but I bet she never will.
That's really cool. I think that's a really cool person to have dinner with. And where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
Oh man, on the moon, maybe?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Who knows?
Jeff Bezos, you know.
I won't joke around. I might end up on the moon getting my sample of moon dust to make some beauty cream with it. Where will I be in 5 years? You picked up on it. I probably will have just finished doing something with beauty school. I'm going to finish my esthetician's license because I want to really fine tune my craft with that. I'll probably have produced a couple of films, a film or three, probably do some things with some fashion. I will definitely be Dr. Ortiz officially. And most importantly, I will be happy and thriving and inspiring other people to do the same.
That's brilliant. I think that's a brilliant place to be in 5 years' time. You know, that's fantastic. Sasha, you've been brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time, knowing how busy you are. And also with the time zone differences with Texas and London, UK. And we, just for our listeners, we had a few passing of messages, didn't we, about the time differences and making sure we were meeting up for this the right time today. Anyway.
Oh, look, daylight savings. That's right. Which
yeah,
is always...
yeah. Where can people find you if they want to contact you, or maybe a website or social media?
Yes, please reach out. I am on Instagram at sasha.the.socialite, SOCIALITE. That's on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook as my International Miss Texas page. I have a Twitter-ish, but Twitter constantly malfunctions. So reach out to me on either of those. I always respond within reason, as long as it's respectful. There's a handful of people and I'm like, oh, that's fine, happy Monday, go fly a kite. So keep the nonsense to yourself if you want to ask me those types of things. If you want to reach out for good stuff, I'm always available on there. But Gavin, thank you. You're always so generous and kind, and you always ask the best questions. You're a great host.
No worries. Thank you very much. Always appreciate compliments. You know,
you're awesome.
And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.